Welcome to Judgmental, the Judgment Podcast, and I'm your host, Andrew Grillier, and I'm here with Colin Bobliness-Hill. Hi, hey, Colin.
Hey, how's it going?
Great. This is episode 16. Haven't had Colin on for a little while, so it's great to have him back. And today we're going to do a special on Judgment Origins. We're going to deep dive some of the stuff in the Origins, the background material for Judgment. For those who don't know, Colin and I write all the background material of Judgment. We've been doing it for a couple of years, I guess now. More than a year, Colin, right? 18 months?
Yeah, maybe? I reckon it's getting that way.
Yeah. Got a fair bit of content online about this and Origins. We get excellent feedback about it. So we've got this rich history for the game now, which hopefully will lead to other things down the track. But for today, we're going to deep dive a few points and then we'll go from there. So, Colin, first of all, how have you been? I think you went to Antarctica was one of the, when we had the break from the podcast and I got George on.
Yeah, but, I went to South America and Antarctica for 6 weeks.
That was good?
That was a little while ago now.
Yeah.
But yes, it was excellent. It was really excellent.
That's
it
great.
Was expensive, but excellent.
That's good. And you played Jack Ding in Judgment recently. Was that yesterday?
That was last night, yes.
How'd the big man go? Apparently he still got his touch.
That was pretty brutal. It ended up 5-4 his favor, but it looked like it was going to go a lot worse than that to start with.
Oh, okay.
It's an interesting... I've got 22 models, so when we did a draft, there's actually a whole bunch of things missing. So I don't have a Zonya, I don't have a Jaeger, I don't have Fazale, I don't have Styx. And as a result, he banned out Brock really early, and then he took two defenders with multi-res. So he had Donrucker and Marcus. And Donrucker recently has been causing me massive problems because I really like using Nefany, and he massively counters her.
Yeah, he does, yeah.
So... I was left taking Rakia, Neff, and I had one other source. Oh, and Zyvira for true damage sources to try and work around it. But I never really got into a position to use any of that. And instead, Don and Marcus kind of dominated the midfield. And on the Scorched Earth map, because of the two walls, and it was map 3 where there's a shrine in the middle, Zaffin kind of sat on his side. And I couldn't really get anything to Zaffin. And Zaffin was just... burning my entire army. He basically killed everything. Like, Jack was rolling like a madman with Zaffin. He was rolling 5 dice and just critting every single time. So it was just like, aim, sit here, I've got a Heartseeker, and yep, your elf's dead. And aim, sit here, and I've got a Heartseeker, and yep, Gendrys is dead. It was just like,
wow.
5 damage, it was 6 damage, and then roll a 5 on the,
Hunter,
and that's the end of it. It's all over sort of thing.
Okay.
So awesome. It got really, really brutal really fast in the middle. Clawed it back a bit. Ended up 5-4. 4 of his souls were on Zaffin.
So, oh my goodness.
First time I've ever seen Zaffin score 4 kills in a game.
Yeah.
It was ludicrous.
Yeah, it's been interesting, Zaffin, because the early meta, people weren't sort of dissing him a bit when all the Americans started playing. And then they had a tournament. And and he's been really good. Yeah. So he's,
like, he currently is 2 more rat and 1 and D3 more damage than he was before.
Nah, what are you talking about? The big game Hunter?
Big Game Hunter went up from D3 to D6 originally.
It's always been D6.
Okay. All right. The Racial Enmity and the...
Racial Enmity's a new one. Yeah, he had traps. You're talking about very early on beta testing. He had traps, remember? You could put.
Yeah.
I mean, Enmity's been around for a while. He hasn't been touched for a little while. I think people have started playing him. But anyway, I think the map suits him.
The new map suits ranged much more than the previous one. Because it's very, very hard to get to him. Particularly like characters like Rakia, because you've got no Pathfinder. It's just a nightmare in the middle of that map.
Yeah. So there's two things. The map provides cover for the guys who shoot, but also cover for their opponents sometimes. But yeah, it can be... It is a map where Gendrys is...
Zaffin conveniently ignores cover and the instantly penalty.
At level 3, right? Yeah.
Yeah. That's correct.
Like, yeah, it's good. Okay, cool.
Yeah, it was good. I'll give it that.
Yeah. All right, that was that. Now, with this Saturday, we've got a tournament in Sydney. Yeah, we're both going. I'm running it unless
I'm in Perth.
Oh, you're in Perth. Are you in Perth today?
No. I'm in Perth as of Wednesday night.
Oh, that's right.
Monday morning.
That's right. Yep. So we always pick the tournament. You're away. But anyway, I'm running it unless there's an odd number, then I'll play. But it would be good. All right. Cool. Let's dive in. So we've got a list of a run sheet today to talk about. So the first thing you want to talk about is the different planes because we've got
energy flow.
Yeah, that's it. We've got a plane structure for the universe, and there's certain rules that are unique to Judgment around how you people transverse the planes. So let's talk about that first, Colin. So how do you get between one plane to another?
So I guess as a quick background, just in case people haven't read it yet or haven't been familiar with it. It's essentially, you've got a set of three planes that are the entirety of creation at this point. So Athian is one plane, and that's the sort of mortal realm. Between is the shadow plane, or the plane that sits between Athian and the final plane, which is the plane of the gods. So the way the sort of universe was structured, the plane of the gods is a place that only gods can access. To get there, you need to have extremely large amounts of energy within you, and there's an energy flow between the three planes all the time. And when it's in balance, Athian has shitloads and shitloads of little life, so it's got lots and lots and lots of little things living there that use little bits of energy. And then between has a lesser number, but lots and lots of things that have slightly more energy. And then once you get up to the plane of the gods, there are very, very few things. There's the gods themselves, and then there's the beings that they create, and that's basically the extent of what lives in that plane.
Little things on the theme, you're talking about like humans and elves and dwarves, right? That's what.
Yep. Of the races, plus all of the animals, plus everything that's living on that plane. Yep. So life has an energy. Some of it is, in our case, seen through soul energy, but some of it is also just the energy of life, and that flows between the planes. So whenever you have more things present in one plane than a sort of there at balance, then the other planes are obviously losing some energy.
Yeah.
And the gods can gift energy to mortals on Athian, and that's what we then see as fate when that mortal dies. It comes back onto the shadow plane as fate, and it's a different type of energy to soul energy, which is why you've got the two sort of currencies in the game. Mm-hmm. When you go the other way, so when you come down from being a god to being in Athian, as Adar did, you bring with you a huge amount of energy. And that... When Adar came to Athian with the intent of killing everyone herself to harvest souls directly, when she did that and died, there was a massive release of energy, because 1/5 of all of the energy from the gods plane, basically at that point in time, came to Athian. And that was a massive release.
And Adar was created by time, right?
Yeah, so Torin, if you go back to the very origins, basically you had four entities in darkness, and they forced a fifth entity to make a playground for them. And that's what we're living in. So they basically took the fifth entity that all the people on Athian think of as Torin, and they forced Torin to craft for them a universe out of Torin's being. And unbeknownst to them, when they did that, they became trapped sort of within it, and part of their essence was used to create it as well.
Yeah.
And that energy that was the whole of Torin plus partial components of them is what forms all of the three planes and all of the living things. So in a sense, a lot of the energy that the old gods are trying to reclaim from those souls is their own energy.
It's getting it back.
Their life force, and they want it back, right? Yeah, because for them, there's always the threat that this could all end, because Torin wants out, right?
Yeah.
Torin doesn't want this to exist anymore. This was not something that Torin wanted to sign up for.
Yeah.
And to break it, Torin needs to imbalance the energy across the three planes so severely that the whole system shatters. That's the sort of driving force to try and split it all apart. And so what Torin did was create another god in the hope that having five in the plane of the gods would be enough to unbalance everything and cause it all to fall apart.
Yeah.
So rose up Adar. So Adar was a mortal on Athian. Torin gifted power to Adar, brought her through to the shadow plane, and then onwards she ascended and was the only person ever to ascend to actual godhood thus far.
Yeah.
She then found that it wasn't enough. The world had not ended, right? So she could see that this wasn't enough to unbalance everything. So she instead contrived of a plan to try and mass gain energy. So mass extinction on Athian itself.
Which is kill everybody, basically, right?
Correct, yeah. And harvest it herself directly.
Yeah.
And thereby try and imbalance it by having so much energy concentrated on herself that when she moved back to the plane of the gods, that would be five gods plus all of the energy from Athian, and that would be the end of it. It would all fall apart.
Yeah.
But the old god thwarted it, and she got killed.
She got killed.
All of her energy was released because she had to become mortal to come back to Athian.
That's right, because she exposed herself at that time, so they were able to kill her. So that's depicted in some of the background stories as a big meteor striking the earth and instantaneously killing millions of Athian residents. Yep.
The kind of metaphor that isn't a metaphor is that on Athian, when you look at the sky, you can see the gods. There's four of them in the sky, and then there's Torin who passes across the sky, same way our sun passes across, but not orbiting. So when Adar became a god, there was a fifth. There was a black sphere followed Torin across the sky and orbited Torin. When she fell, that black sphere came to ground.
Yeah, that's
that
right.
Black sphere came to ground as a physical thing and ripped a scar across the entire face of Athene.
Yep. And that's called the scar, isn't it?
Yeah. Tidal waves, mass tsunamis, mass extinction event. Lots and lots of people died. Millions of people, fires, raging infernos across the planet. Well, the countryside. And just huge earthquakes, mass disruption to everybody.
Yep. So when this happened, we had this massive amount of energy flood the plane of Athene, and obviously the survivors were getting a bit pissed off with all the meddling of the gods.
Slightly miserable about this whole god thing.
That's right. So that's when we had the gathering, which is the first big thing in our timeline, where the races get together and decide we're going to do something about this and try to stop the gods, because there's so much energy about. There's the smart people from each of the main races were able to put together something that let their chosen champions actually transcend the planes into between. So that's where they got the energy to do that, was from Adar's fall. And that's where the story of Judgment the Game kind of starts, where you have these five beings go back to between, and they, over time, they become demigods. So they don't ascend godhood, but they manage to survive on between and have enough energy to sustain themselves. And in turn, they started getting followers on Athene, which increased their power. And that's what the whole soul harvesting is all about. That's pretty much where the game starts, right, Cole?
Yeah. So they basically, if you imagine that you're one of those five, right, you're a champion of your race, your whole, everyone around you believes that if you get sent through to this other plane, you can confront the gods, defeat the gods, and end their meddling on your land, right? And that was the plan. When they got there, they discovered that that wasn't it, right? That wasn't the step. There was another step, another exponential step in power to go from where they had got to where the gods actually were.
They couldn't reach their destination. Exactly.
Right, so they got there, and now they're kind of screwed, because they're on a plane where they've moved there physically, so there's no body for them to go back to. It's not the same as champions that are being summoned later on. Yep. This is physically their whole body went to between, and they now live there. That's it. They have no way out. Mm-hmm. And while they're there, they have multiple problems. One is they've recognized, and there's a little story floating around somewhere talking about it, but they recognize that there isn't enough energy for all of them to go and confront the gods. It can't be done. There is enough energy for a fifth person to be among the four gods. That's definitely possible, because Adar has done it once before.
Yeah.
But that would mean that only one of them goes, and that person is going to have to take the energy off all of the other four, in addition to as much energy as they can scavenge from around between, if they want to have any chance of making the transition.
So they started to discover this after a certain time, and that's when they became they stopped working together and became isolated. They carved their own domains on the Shadow Plane, and now we've had a few stories. The most recent one was about Fazil, and he actually speaks to each of them in turn, and you get an idea of what their domain is like and what their life is like as a demigod. And we have this instance where they're now starting to pull mortals. Now, not physically, not their physical body. We have an ethereal cord, and they have a projection of the heroes on the Shadow Plane. Between that lets them harvest souls, because they're too scared to move out of their domain to go get the souls themselves now, because they're scared of each other and everything else.
Yeah, so they're just terrified that if they step outside, the other four will completely collapse on them, and that's the end of them, right? Yeah. And they'll just divvy them up amongst them.
So that's where the story is at the moment. So all four of them, five of them, are pretty much demigods. They have followers. Like, we've got stories about the witch doctors of the orcs and Cruel, and he's trying to. We've got people who support the new gods and some people who support the old gods, and there's a bit of a struggle on Athene. So instead of actually getting rid of the god problem, they added to it. and that's where we basically are at the moment. That explains the energy and how you get between the planes. And I think there's anything else on that you wanted to touch on, Colin?
No, I think that's pretty close on the way that all works. And it's important to note that it's when a person is summoned, the effigies are kind of a key. The effigies are kind of a device that Krognash and Co. stumbled across, that enables you to bring a portion, to not bring the whole, but to pull some of the soul from the person that is on Athene through to between and let it retain coherency. Because the way it naturally works is when you die on Athene, your soul energy dissipates into between automatically. And it comes through in bits and pieces, dribs and drabs. And maybe some of them you lose during your life when particularly nasty things happen to you. But at death, the remainder of your life energy leeches across into between. And normally, a soul that leeches in that way doesn't retain any coherency. So you may come across as thousands of little pieces or hundreds of little pieces or dozens. And you don't retain your personality with that. So the souls that we see in the game, the fragments that we see, they just drift around. They have no personality driving them. They have no oomph behind them. But what the effigy lets you do is bring through enough of that person that they can retain that coherency for a short period of time and enact their own will upon between and be able to actually perform tasks and do things. And so between thrives on that soul energy that's coming back from Athene. If Athene doesn't have anything dying for a long period of time, then between will start to dry out. If between, like, and when Adar rose, that was one of the consequences, was that between started to really lose energy because Athene was still having people breed and do stuff. And now there was a whole new god in the third plane. That energy had to come from somewhere, right? And between was drying out effectively, which is part of what drove Bastion when we get to that conversation.
So that's the good segue because Bastion was the next thing we wanted to talk about. So each of the heroes, we've written backstories for most of them. There's a few we haven't, but we have got some pretty good stories for a lot of them. And Bastion's always a special character that is quite unique. So Bastion originally was an inhabitant of Between. He's a native of Between. And he went to Athene to follow Adar to try to stop her in her quest to kill everybody. Now, when she died, he was kind of trapped on Athene in his mortal body, and he hasn't been able to get back. So he actually gets back as a summoned, which means that a projection of himself goes back and that kind of thing. But that Sebastian's kind of trapped in this state where he's not in his native plane, and he can't get the energy together to get back physically, and it lends itself to some of the stories where Bastion's like a law keeper and he's been around for a very long time, because we can explain time on Between acts a bit weird, not in the linear fashion that we know. So so that's how he's got all these special things that's going on in his libraries, and we've got stories of Victor stealing books from him and things like that. So, and he's got knowledge of demons and all this kind of thing. Bastion's a good character, Colin. So you want to touch on your take on him?
Yeah. So Bastion, in his original form, and it's kind of, again, we'll have to dip into a little bit of the characteristics of the realm, but Between is a different realm to what we would experience and what people from Athene are used to. There is no meaningful concept of time within Between. There is no meaningful concept of physical. It's all around energy and will. It's all around thought and personality. And so beings on that plane take the form that they choose to take, whatever form their mind or their personality coalesces them into. There are characteristics of them, so they will always, to an extent, show certain signatures no matter what form they take, and those normally take the form of a glowing set of runes on them that is visible to others. And again, when we say visible, you're talking about a realm of energy. So this is all about the way things are perceived by the personalities that are brought there. And when you bring a being from Athene onto Between, that kind of changes it because they bring with them time, because they believe in time. They know about time. Time is a thing that they take for granted. So whenever they're there, it kind of forms a capsule of linear time around the people that are there, which is kind of the game board in a sense. So you've got 10 souls that have been brought to Between to fight or to do things, to harvest soul energy and serve the everlasting. While they're there, around them, time is linear. Time is exactly how you would expect it to be. But their abilities are different, right? Because their abilities are driven by their personality and their will. So Bastion came from that environment. He came from that environment. When Adar went through to Athene, she kind of made that passing easier. If you imagine the border between the two planes, when she went through it like a fucking meteor with a huge amount of energy behind her.
Yep.
And he kind of rode the coattails of that. So his transition across was actually reasonably easy for him.
Yep.
But once he got there, again, unlike most of the others, he didn't recognize that the way back would be significantly harder.
Yeah.
And when Adar fell, which he had a hand in assisting, when she fell and they used all of her energy to pull five straight through to between, they took it all. It was all gone. He had stuck. No way to then come back.
Hmm.
And so he then has roamed. And because he's not a natural being on Athene, he doesn't age in the same way. And because he has access to, while he is on Athene, he has access to significantly more life energy than people that were born on Athene, because he is a native to between. He kind of doesn't die while he's on Athene. He's if not immortal, he is close to immortal.
Yeah.
And so he's had a lot of time to think, and he obviously came across with a lot of knowledge that people on Athene did not have, because he was a denizen of between, and between kind of straddles that whole timeline thing because it has no real linear time. So he has knowledge of things that haven't happened yet. He has knowledge of things that happened a very long time ago. He has knowledge of things that happen on the other plane, the gods plane. And he has knowledge of demons, because demons come from the other plane, but they are present on between. So he has all of these bits of understanding that people on Athene have no way of knowing. And as a result, he's written a lot of that down over time. And he has also sought out lots and lots of lore from others to try and work out a way for him to go back. So he's, you know, tried to seek out the lore that was used for the effigies and the lore that was used by the sort of cultists of Adar before she came down.
Yep.
And he's the sole custodian of a lot of that information now, because there's no one else that remembers it.
Yeah, cool. That's spot on, obviously it is. But yeah, that's Bastion's story, which gives a lot of scope for us to do interesting things with the character. So he's, and the timeline is moving forward. So we've got a lot of cool things coming up and plans to do as the game develops and the background follows it. Another person you want to talk about today, Colin, is, before I touch on, let's actually go to the goblins, because we've got a goblin race now, and the goblins weren't one of the five that were who sent a champion back. They weren't invited to the gathering either, and we haven't really talked about that much yet. We've just had goblin stories, but not mentioned it. So, in fact, the goblins weren't invited by the gathering. For the gathering, they were kind of shunned. It's a little bit of a two-way street, but they were shunned from the gathering, and Colin will elaborate, but the goblins were effectively Adar, which for them was the god of darkness, not the god of death, was their god. They are subterranean race, and so she was naturally their god. Then to other races that look like that, goblins were all death cultists. So when Adar actually perished, the goblins were actually in mourning and devastated, and so that whole period around the gathering was just the goblins just missed it, weren't part of it. So do you want to elaborate a bit more on that one, Cole?
Yeah, so what I like about their story and what I think is kind of cool is the gods in this setting have always been shaped by the beliefs of those who follow them. And that was the thing that kind of drove the gods from between to their own plane, was they could feel that the beliefs of those on Athene were shaping them. And so if you imagine these four entities that were in darkness, they weren't, you know, one of them who really liked fire and one of them who really liked earth and one of them who really liked water and one who really liked air. That wasn't them. But when they created a world, when Torin gave them the ability by making this place that they could just do whatever they wanted, and they created their own races and they created their own landscapes and they created whatever they wanted to create, the things that they created had beliefs and the things that they created had will. And they were in a plane where it was shaped by will, right? Because it was shaped by their will and that was what they wanted.
Yeah.
But as more of their energy was being used by all of these other living things that had beliefs and had ideas about what these gods would be and what they could do, they found that their own powers were being limited. They were being crafted into the thing that the beings wanted them to be. And they could feel themselves losing part of their own personality and becoming the thing that they were being told they were. So Foran was becoming a god of fire from not having any particular interest, presumably, in fire before that point in time. And so they fled to another plane to try and insulate themselves to an extent from that belief. And when they did that, it's important to sort of recognize that the rest of the races don't didn't know that, right? Like, they still had their beliefs. So if you believed in fire as the good god and you believed in water as the bad god, for argument's sake, because you were living in a place where it was fucking cold and wet all the time, or vice versa, then you would have beliefs about what that god is and what that god's aspects are. And for the goblins, they lived in darkness. Their whole body is adapted to darkness. They were created that way. And so for them, sunlight, like Torin, is bad. Torin burns them. It feels bad. It causes them pain. And so they saw Torin as bad and evil, and they saw Adar as a god of darkness. They didn't associate Adar with death. They associated Adar with the dark. And the dark for them is safety and good. So they saw her as, you know, the coming of the Messiah. When she came to Athen, for them, that was like, here's your god incarnate. This is the person you're meant to follow. This is the person you're meant to believe in. And so when they turned out to support her and then she died, for them, that was like, well, crap, what do you do, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Your god has actually incarnated and then you've watched it die. Where do you go from there?
Poor goblins.
As a society, where do you go, right? Like, all of your cults, all of your religious leaders, all of your governmental leaders, what do they do? You literally saw God and God just died. what are your options now?
Then you can start party. Yeah, so and the thing is that there's a bit of a haphazard story about who gets summoned and who doesn't. And the demigods don't have complete control over who gets summoned. So they don't sort of handpick the people to come up. And we've got instances where the old gods are putting in heroes that get summoned on their behalf. And then we've got the goblins. So the first goblin to get summoned was Jaeger. And so there's a short backstory about him, but there's more goblins coming out. So the goblins are now becoming part of the summoned, and they're becoming back part of the storyline that they missed when the gathering first happened. So there's some interesting stuff going on. Colin wrote something recently about Cruel, which we're not going to talk about today too much because I'm going to let that story unfold. But that's a really good story happening there. I wrote a story about Shan, and so Colin's kind of writing the Cruel story arc, which involves Zonya heavily, and I'm touching on the Haxar story arc a bit more, which involves Shan. So it's quite cool. We have got this leading somewhere, but that's currently where we're at the moment. Now, one of the ones that people always ask about, and people who have read the fluff ask about the Minotaur race, because the Minotaur race do wax and wane. Like, they become very powerful, become very weak. They have
a very exciting timeline.
They do. And so people have asked about how's it all come about. So whether they somehow go from a peaceful herd roaming existence to a crazy sort of Kogan type of existence and then become effectively enslaved or later on. So Thorgar, he's kind of the origins of... it's not Don Raka, it's actually Thorgar that is the origins of the melee that hits Minotaurs or Minotaurs, as I get told to say it.
Who's telling you to call them Minotaurs?
Last when I was on the podcast,
I Minotaur. Yeah, Minotaur is fine.
Yeah, I got when I was on the podcast for the Oregon guys in the States, and they were going, "Oh, you mean Minotaurs?" I'm like, "Okay, yep."
Do I? Yeah, I don't know about that.
So, Colin, Thorgar, go. Let's hear about this crazy man. What happened?
Do you want to do the Minotaur arc from sort of start, or and Thorgar's place in it?
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah. Give a bit more context.
So this one boils back to the same key character in one sense, in that Adar, when she was mortal originally, because she was mortal, then she rose, then she came, she was a Minotaur, right? So she was a Minotaur in life. And when she returned to Athen, she needed generals because her plan was to kill everybody. And for that, you need an army.
Correct.
So she had generals, and she wanted specific things from her generals, right? Because when she came back, although everybody was talking a good game about being a death cultist and summoning her, it's a step between being a death cultist and genuinely being willing to kill everybody in the world for your god. And so to make her generals much more inured to the horror that was probably going to be exposing itself as they killed everyone, she had to make changes to them. So she chose some of those among her strongest followers, the majority of whom were Minotaurs and perhaps some goblins, you might think.
Yep.
And she made changes to them. And she made changes to them that were relatively subtle. They were changes to their personality and changes to their sort of how they might feel about violence and how they might feel about rage. And she made some changes that essentially were made at a genetic level, but had a sort of outward manifestation in their personality and their actions. And as generals want to do, they were powerful individuals. And after she fell, they didn't necessarily die with her. Large numbers of them did not. And they were still powerful individuals. And so they had bloodlines that spread from them onwards. And one of the things, like, amongst the changes she made to them were things like potency and ability to lead and charisma and things that not only mark you out as more likely to potentially be summoned, but also mark you out as more likely to lead, more likely to reproduce, and more likely to have a bloodline. And as a result, their direct descendants carried those genetic traits. And Thorgar is one of the direct descendants from one of her most powerful generals and has a very, very pure blood trace back to that general.
Yep.
But those changes, they're genetic meddling, right? And they worked very well on the exact members she wanted to meddle with because she wasn't anticipating them ever having a bloodline or any future children or anything. So she didn't need to worry about what the implications would be in the future. So from her point of view, it was a change to an individual, but the reality was it was a long-standing change that would mutate further over generations and have untold effects in the future. And what really happened was as it flowed through those different generations, it kind of started to twist them. And first it started to become evident in a sort of blood rage that would come up in certain Minotaurs and would be very evident. And again, these Minotaurs are still carrying those charismatic traits, those leadership traits. So they're sitting in high positions in Minotaur society and they're starting to evince very, very unpleasant other traits on the side. And their physical traits start to slowly change as well. That happens a little bit later, but the blood rage starts to come through in them inside of the next few hundred cycles. So by Kogan's time, the blood rage is very well known. And it's kind of, they don't know what caused it. They see it as a curse. They talk of it as a curse. And by that time, they all have these sort of legends about people who mastered the curse and people who could control themselves and had perfect control over their anger and their rage. And Thorgar is held up for them as almost a kind of saint, of someone who historically had this power over his own rage, could control it, could control the berserking urge and not unleash it except when he wanted to, sort of thing. Now, the reality for Thorgar in his actual life was he was taken when he was very young and then held and used as a gladiator through the majority of his life to where we have seen in stories.
Yep.
Plans for his future that might enable him to then have a continuing bloodline after that. But at present, he's a gladiator in a pit, effectively. He's very well looked after because the agents of the Everlasting are aware that he is one of the summoned and they don't have that many summoned to work with, so they are very careful about letting them live and die.
Yep.
So he has people ensuring that he won't die, but he also is fighting very, very regularly. And there's a couple of stories floating around. I think we might have lost them off the website, but there's a few floating around that will no doubt reappear.
Yep.
So that's kind of Thorgar's life at present. He's got this anger issue, augmented by the fact that he spent most of his life in pseudo-slavery. So he's not having the greatest of times. He does have more and more power, and he is reasonably good at controlling his urges, and he is seen as reasonably good at controlling his urges. So there are plans for him in the future. And as we go forward, you can see Kogan, and there's a story floating around Kogan and his experiences in the war.
Yep, nice.
And he's in the part of the timeline where Minotaurs have a lot of anger issues as a race.
Yep.
And it's kind of seen for them, part of the reason they may have it is seen as because in that timeline, at that point in time, the elves were kind of dominating everything and the Minotaurs and the orcs kind of rebelled a bit. And that's what that war really comes out of. And gives them a chance to try and break free, which they do.
Yeah.
And they do drive the elves into a bit of hiding.
They do.
And for a brief period of time, the decadent Minotaur court rules the world.
It does.
Happy with life.
It's the dark ages of
If you really love
Athean's
Minotaurs, then you should end your story there and go, yep, see, they won in the end. It's all good. No worries.
because it goes a bit south, yeah, once again.
Does, yeah.
It
So
does.
it takes a turn for the worse when the elves make their comeback.
Yes, so that's the Thorgar story, and also the background of the Minotaur, the Minotaur race. Bloody hell, I've got
I
it
know
wrong.
me no me not all.
So that was that. Actually, Colin, do you want to talk about undead, or
Sure.
what do you think? Have we got enough preparation for
Oh, we can wax lyrical on some formats of undead
that?
as long as we're a little bit generalist.
So the general idea is that if someone dies, it is possible for them to actually sustain enough of themselves when they go to between that they actually are physical. They've got some kind of physical form, even though they are dead, correct?
They can maintain enough of their personality
Yeah,
somehow.
that's
There's
right.
a variety of different ways it could happen, but
Yeah.
basically the concept is rather than coming across as a cloud of bits and pieces that
Yeah.
appear in different places, you
Yeah.
manage to come across as one coherent whole. Whether
That's
you've
right.
lost something along the way or not, different
Yeah.
question, but you know, enough of you to still be a thing.
Yeah. And with the first undead that we've released into the game has been Lord Fazil, quite a powerful undead figure. So he essentially, I guess theoretically, they're like natives. Well, they're not. Their plane of existence is actually between. So that's how they work, which
They
is
no
what.
longer have a body on Athena.
That's right. Yeah.
Or if
So.
they do, it's mostly dirt by now.
That's right, yeah. And which is why that their souls work different in the game, because they don't have the capacity as kind of, they're not tethered to the effigy as such. So they don't, when they capture souls, it works a bit different to the mortals that are projected onto the plane, onto the shadow plane itself. So we've got a lot more coming with the undead. I think people have seen it in the future. It's kind of an undead and elves are protagonists, and so there's a lot of talking about how does that come about. So that's one of the things that Colin and I are fleshing out and making sure we've got all our everything's coherent. But that's what we're looking at
Spoiler
the
alert, it's not great for the Minotaurs.
moment. Sorry, I know there's a guy. He's a guy called the Guard Dog. I don't know. He's on Discord and he's pretty new to the game. He's from the States. Loves Minotaurs, and so he's using them in the Vassal League. Like he's nuts. So he's gonna, if he listens to this, he's gonna be unhappy. But yeah, I mean, the
Look,
thing is,
they got a good 1,000 years of like
oh yeah,
of quality time out of it. They'll be fine.
and the
No,
current
they're
version
not
of the
too bad.
game, like they're actually got some quite powerful individuals in the game. So it's
They do.
yeah, they're
And they're not doing too bad in the future. It's just things got a bit bleak for them. They'll work it out.
And we had a really good story that Colin wrote recently about Dohnraka and his daughter as well. That was really good and well received when they were fighting the. Is it the Chitten? Is that how you say it?
You can say it however you wish to
Yeah,
say
that's it. Yes, that sounds good.
it.
Sounds good to me. Cool. All right. Excellent. So we'll actually have another. We'll do another podcast on Undead once we've got it completely fleshed out. But yeah, there is a lot more to that. There's a lot more to that story because they become such a. And Zaren's one we've always hovered around where he's trying to become immortal, or trying to. And there's rumors he's already undead and this kind of thing. So we're looking forward to really
He's
expanding that part of the story.
a little bit different, right? Because he's planning on becoming the other kind of undead in the sense that he's going to stay on Athean
That's
but
his.
not be
That's
alive
yeah.
anymore.
That's his goal. That he's yeah. He's trying to do it the other way, where he doesn't actually doesn't his body doesn't go to, or his essence doesn't go to between at all. He actually stays.
He manages to
Yeah.
stay but maintain some sort of a tap to
Yeah.
between and keep himself enough energy to stay alive and be able to sort of be a thing.
Yeah, that's right.
Whereas Fazil is much more of a, he has become a denizen of Between, and it's important to note that Between lives off that soul energy. So the natives of Between naturally eat, in a sense, soul energy. And that's why you kind of have Vajashas that chase around souls, and you have Dorgakans chasing around souls and stuff. And
Correct.
then you've got Fazil who can literally eat souls.
Yes, that's right. Yeah,
So
in the game, yeah, that's right.
he's got this kind of two-edged sword where he's working for an everlasting And he kind of also wants to eat the souls himself.
Yeah. So there's an interesting ally. The everlasting, the demigods have gotten so desperate at this point in time that they're looking for any advantage they can get over each other and things like that. So this is where there's motivation around accepting some of the help. And even when there's champions becoming summoned that are have ulterior motives, such as Bastion or, you know, Haxar, but still it's it helps them in their cause. So that's the idea.
Yeah, it's win-win. Both people get power.
That's right.
Everyone's happy.
Yep. Now, you touched on Dorkhan, which is really good because the next one we want to talk about is demons and
yes.
the planes of the gods and how
I like to think of them as the children of Adar personally, but you can call them demons.
Okay, perfect. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about demons as they are as Adar's children. So
sure.
How does that work?
So if you imagine the plane of the gods is this sort of you as a being have to be high energy, everything else in there you're kind of creating for your own, similar to how it happens in between. So in Foreign's realm, you would imagine, because of the way Foreign has been shaped, there is a lot of fire. There are infernos. Infernos kind of work for Foreign as his agents. And the same goes. Welland's got lots of water elementals, presumably, and lots of other things as well. One would hope that they're not entirely one-dimensional. But Adar was a bit of an odd case because Adar was created later. And Adar sort of was a little bit twisted possibly in the mind, wasn't 100% straightforward as a person.
Yep.
Which I guess kind of makes sense because you would hope that they're not 100% straightforward as a person if they're then going to concoct a plan to kill literally every living thing on a planet. So she created children that worked as agents for her during the time that she was one of the five at the time.
Just to clarify, people thought Thanos was bad. He was aiming to kill half the people. So Adar is double Thanos. So think Thanos.
Adar was what Torin wanted Adar to be.
Yeah, down to.
And Torin needed someone to break the planes, and a sane person wasn't going to make that work. An entirely sane person. I'm not saying she's completely batshit crazy, but she had motivations that were in line with Torin's, and part of what she did was create these creatures that kind of served her purposes, and part of her purpose was to scare people into believing in her, and part of her purpose was to be able to force things to happen on between. And so she created these demons. And for the goblins, interestingly, those demons weren't seen as horrible things. They were seen as blessings to an extent, which I guess if you look at Dorgakhan in a certain light, you could see him as a weird, fishy, eyeball-y blessing.
And of course, Jaeger's mount is a demonic steed of sorts. Yeah. But yes.
So when she fell, as she passed through between, she dragged some demons with her that then now live on between. And then as she fell to Athene, she dragged some more with her through to Athene. And most of those died during her fall, like when she actually passed. But there's still bucket loads of them in her part of the plane of the gods, because although she fell and died, the void is still kind of there, because people obviously still believe in death, right? Like there's still people that believe in death. There's just no good god to assign it to anymore. And so that energy is still sort of flowing. It's not a flow in the same way that it is for the other four gods, and it's not a sustaining flow, but it's certainly a trickle. And there's still some aspect of something that runs that section. It doesn't necessarily run it in the sense of makes things happen, but there is still a presence of some sort. Yeah. And so the demons are her children. They are still there. They can still be summoned. And some of them specifically were named and were able to be summoned. And some of them Bastion may have been familiar with during the time that Bastion was a living being on between. And that was certainly where Victor was going when he was looking for books with names.
Yep.
And so those demons, they're kind of available for summons. When you summon them to between, you're not getting the whole demon. You're getting a fraction of the demon. It's kind of similar to the tether relationship from an effigy.
Yep.
But certainly when Jaeger appears, Jaeger thinks of a mount. Like Jaeger thinks that he has a mount, and he has a mount.
Yeah.
So that's that's kind of a cool aspect for the goblins. They're quite likely to be tied into demons relatively regularly because for them, demons were, to an extent, a positive thing.
Goblin warlock incoming. Okay.
I wouldn't be surprised to see further relations to demons on their stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, that gave us this kind of place to move, because the monsters, you've got monsters that are aligned to one of the four gods, and there's an inferno so far, and I imagine that there will be on and off other calls to others, and there's shrines related to specific gods.
Yep.
And the demons kind of fall into this other category of they are related to Adar, and there's something that is a vestige of what Adar was.
Cool. That's really, I mean, once, as I said at the outset, for those who haven't read the background material, there's quite a bit of depth to it. We've been at it for ages. Colin's mind goes crazy and comes up with really cool ideas. So we've got a lot of content there. We're going to keep writing it as we get inspiration and time.
Yeah. Someone needs to talk to Torrin a little bit on this one.
That's right. But we answered some of the questions that people had in this one today, like people wanted to find out more about Thorgar and Bastion, things like that. So we'll continue to do that. I think we'll do another episode another time once we've got a bit more fleshed out about undead. And anything we get questions around, I always keep track of all the questions people ask. And then so if we get enough to put an episode together, we'll do it. That's probably about it today. Unless there's anything else you want to touch on, Colin?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head. So I guess I would tell people to also have a squiz around. There's a little bit of information on each of the races, and there's arcs for each of the races. And I think there'll be a little bit more information about the different Everlasting as we move forward as well, to give you a bit of a feel for maybe you want to have an effigy to a specific one. Maybe you want to think about what your warband looks like in the context of that specific Everlasting.
Yep.
So we've got lots of plans and lots of thoughts in those areas. And there's a little bit of published material around the different Everlasting. There's not a huge amount yet.
Yep.
So it's something that I'm looking forward to fleshing out a bit more as well.
Yeah, 100%. So, and I think that's where we're... Like, there's just so much untold still. It was just the beauty of it. The more we sort of write, the more you realise, oh, wow, there's a lot more we haven't actually got out there. So, I think this is good to do a podcast now and again, just to sort of get verbally just talk about things and rattle off stuff, and it's quite cool. And then we'll flesh it out in actual narrative stories as we go. So... thanks, Colin, for taking the time. It's good to have you back on the podcast, and we'll try to do one sooner rather than later, another one.
Yeah, no worries.
Once we get a bit more stuff out there. And those who don't know, Colin usually carves it up on the table whenever he plays, so that's good as well. And he's the current champion of the Australian, King of the Grove. And we've got another final coming up end of the year, which I'm sure Colin will be a part of. So that'd be cool. And hopefully we'll get Jack Ding. I'm going to try to get Jack Ding on the stream. That's my life.
That's going to make my life so much harder if he starts playing again.
That's my life goal, is to get him back, at least on the stream. He'll be hilarious. He'll have a cult following. All right. Cool. So thanks, everybody, for listening. Please subscribe to us if you can. We're on iTunes and all that kind of stuff. I'll put links up after the show. And thank you to Colin once again. And we'll speak to you guys soon.
My pleasure. Anytime.
All right. Bye.